Welcome to Guide to the Cosmos on WebTalkRadio.net with your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, physicist, public speaker, and author of Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, and his new second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident? With Robert as our guide to the cosmos, we will explore the frontiers of science and participate in the exciting discoveries of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Now, providing public access to science, here's your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome back. Today we will explore gravity and the three R's. This sounds like it might be a heavy metal rock band, but actually we're talking about a force of nature. There are going to be some interesting images for you to look at while you're listening to the audio track, so go to my website, guidetothecosmos.com, click on the microphone icon, and bring up today's show, Gravity and the Three R's. Now, most of us think we know what gravity is. My 2-year-old granddaughter, Isabella, summed it up succinctly. She said, "Gravity go down." But in fact, gravity may be the most mysterious and the most important force of nature. It's the one that all of us are most familiar with, but perhaps know the least about. Gravity is responsible for 3 quite different phenomena. It has 3 different faces that involve 3 different R's. The 3 faces of gravity are: gravity pulls massive objects together with 2 R's, gravity creates the tides in our oceans with 3 R's, and gravity slows the passage of time with 1 R. In each case, the effect of gravity depends only on 2 things, mass and distance. The mass that's causing the gravitational effect, we'll call that m. And the distance between that mass and what's being affected is called r. It might have been nice if distance was labeled d, but for historical reasons, physicists call it r, so that's what we're going to do today. So for some examples, when Newton saw an apple falling from the tree, m, the mass, would be the mass of the Earth, and r would be the distance between the apple and the center of the Earth. When he studied the orbit of the moon around Earth, m would be the mass of the Earth, and r would be the distance from the center of the moon to the center of the Earth. Now let's talk about why the moon orbits the Earth, with gravity acting as m over r squared. That's 2 r's. M over r squared means that the force decreases with the square of the distance. So if you are 10 times further away, the force of gravity, because of m over r squared, is 100 times less. And if you are twice as close, then the force of gravity becomes 4 times stronger. Newton was the first to develop a complete theory of gravity. He showed that gravity was a universal force. The same force pulls apples off trees and also holds the moon in its orbit. It was the first time that there was a universal force of nature. The first time that humanity was able to say how something worked everywhere and always. So Newton discovered that the moon orbits Earth because of a combination of gravity and motion. If the moon was ever to come to a complete stop, it would immediately thereafter fall straight down onto the surface of the Earth, and we'd all perish in a cataclysmic collision. It's the motion of the moon that prevents that catastrophe. And if there were no gravity, the motion of the moon would carry it off into deep space and it would be gone forever. So what keeps the moon in orbit and what keeps Earth in orbit around the sun is motion plus gravity. Image number 1 on the website illustrates this. And I know that some of you aren't able to look at the images while you're listening to the audio track. So if you're driving to work, focus on keeping your car in the right orbit on the freeway while imagining that the Earth is on the left in front of you and the moon is on the right. Now, since the moon's orbit is more or less circular, at this particular instant that we're going to imagine, let's say that it is moving straight up on the right side of the Earth. Now, every minute, every 60 seconds, the moon moves forward in its path 38 miles. That's the green arrow on the image in the website. And in that same moment, the moon falls toward Earth 16 feet due to gravity. That would be to the left in our image toward the Earth, and it corresponds to the yellow arrow in the image on the website. Now, it's the sum of these two motions, which is the red arrow in the image, that causes the moon to slowly turn around Earth. 16 feet doesn't seem like a lot compared to 38 miles, but it's the perfect amount to keep the moon in its orbit. Newton understood that gravity's pull is proportional to m over r squared. That's r times r, two r's. For apples, r is the distance from the tree to the center of the Earth. And for the moon, r is the distance. And for the moon, r is the distance from the moon's center to Earth's center. So we are being pulled by Earth's gravity with its m over r squared, and also by the gravity of everything else, including our sun. Now, even though the sun is a third of a million times more massive than Earth, it's also 23,000 times farther away than the center of the Earth. So the sun's m over r squared is almost 2,000 times less than that of the Earth. The sun's force is still large enough to hold Earth in its orbit, but it has only a minor impact on us. At high noon, when the sun is directly overhead, it's pulling us up, and we weigh a little less than we do at midnight when the sun is on the opposite side of the Earth and it's pulling us down. But it's only a little bit. At noon, the sun reduces the weight of a 166-pound person by 1/10 of a pound. And at midnight, it adds 1/10 of a pound. So if you're on a diet, don't get up in the middle of the night to weigh yourself. What about the pull of the moon's gravity on us? Well, it's about 300,000 times less than Earth's pull, and about 200 times less than that of the sun. Now, does this mean that Earth's gravity has no effect on us? Well, not at all, because gravity has two more faces that we'll discuss after the break. You are listening to Guide to the Cosmos on WebTalkRadio.net. I am your host, Robert Piccioni, and we're talking about gravity and the three R's. We'll be right back after these messages.
Explore Dr. Piccioni's website, GuideToTheCosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts that are available to you, our radio audience. Robert's first book, Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, makes the exciting discoveries of modern physics, astronomy, and cosmology understandable for everyone. And it was just selected as the best science book of the year by National Best Books. As Robert says, you don't have to be a great musician to appreciate great music, and the same is true for science. If you can change money, you can understand Einstein. Robert's second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident?, describes how precisely tuned the universe is to support life, and shows how amazingly improbable that is. Go to Robert's website and send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows. That's GuideToTheCosmos.com.
We're back, talking about gravity and the three R's. We talked about the normal pull of gravity, m over r squared. We talked about how Earth's pull on us is about 2,000 times that of the Sun, which in turn is about 200 times that of the Moon. So does that mean that the Moon's gravity has little or no effect on Earth? Well, no, because gravity has another face, the tidal force, which is proportional to m over r cubed. That's r times r times r for three r's. M over r cubed means that the tidal force decreases with the third power of distance. So if you are 2 times further away, the tidal force will be 8 times less. 2 times 2 times 2 is 8. And if you are 10 times further away, the tidal force will be 1,000 times less. 10 cubed. The Moon's mass is 27 million times less than the Sun's, but the Moon is almost 400 times closer to us. So when you divide by that third r to get r cubed, the Moon's tidal force on Earth becomes just over twice as strong as the Sun's. And you can see how this works in image number 2, which I'll describe for those that don't have the images available. Now imagine again that the Earth is on the left and the Moon is on the right. The Moon's gravity pulls on each little piece of the Earth and pulls it towards the center of the Moon with a force that is, as we discussed before, m over r squared. So the water that's on the side of the Earth facing the Moon is closer to the center of the Moon and gets pulled more than Earth's center. And Earth's center, in turn, gets pulled more than the water that's on the far side of the Moon. Now, everything, not just water, gets pulled in this same way, but since the water moves far more easily than rock, let's just talk about the water for now. Now, this means that water will bulge out on two sides, the side that's facing the Moon, because that's being pulled away from the Earth, and the side away from the Moon, because the Earth is being pulled away from the water. So there's a high tide on the Moon side, and on the opposite side, there's also a high tide. So we get 2 high tides every day as the Earth's surface turns relative to the Moon. This seems kind of strange that the Moon can cause a high tide on the opposite side of the Earth, but again, it's because the Moon is pulling the Earth more strongly than it's pulling the water on that far side. And we also get 2 low tides every day as well. Again, if the Moon is on the right and the Earth is on the left, the water that's at the top of the image is being pulled toward the center of the Moon, which is slightly downward, and the water on the bottom side of the Earth in this image is being pulled slightly upward. So the water is being squeezed away from the top and bottom sides, as you see in this image, and that also contributes to low tides there and high tides on the side facing the Moon and the side opposite to that. The Sun also contributes to Earth's tides, but with half of the Moon's effect. So we get extreme tides when the tidal forces of the Sun and the Moon act together in the same direction. This happens when the Sun and the Moon are on the same side of the Earth, or when they're on opposite sides of the Earth. And again, this is a reflection of that strange effect that the tidal force causes a high tide on the opposite side of the Earth. So when the Sun and the Moon are on opposite sides of the Earth, they're both causing high tides in the same places, and so we get these extreme tides, extreme high tide and extreme low tide. And when the Sun and the Moon are 90 degrees apart in the sky, for example, if the Moon is rising or setting at high noon, when the Sun is directly overhead, then their tidal forces will oppose each other, and then our tides will be minimal. We'll have relatively small high tides and relatively small low tides. Let me say something as an aside for my more mathematical friends. and those that are allergic to math can tune me out for about 30 seconds. The tidal force is driven by 1 over r cubed because it depends on the differences in gravity from one point to another. The difference in 1 over r squared varies as 1 over r cubed. In calculus, that's called a derivative. Those of you that tuned me out can come back now because we're all done with that awful math stuff. Now, the last face of gravity is time dilation. If we throw a ball up into the air, it loses energy. It slows down. Someone said that everything that goes up must come down, but that's not always true. We can launch rockets way out into deep space. Einstein said, however, that everything that does go up against gravity must lose energy in the process. So even light must lose energy when it moves away from a massive body. Light can't slow down. It always moves at the same speed through empty space, namely the speed of light. But light can lose energy by reducing its frequency. Light is a wave, an electromagnetic wave, that's oscillating back and forth and has peaks and troughs, just like a wave in the ocean. The number of times that its electric field peaks each second is called its frequency. Blue light has high energy, a high frequency, and it waves very fast. Red light has less energy, a lower frequency, and waves much slower. And yellow light and other colors are in between. As light moves away from a massive body, it becomes redder and redder. This is called gravitational red shift. And we actually see this happening with light that comes to us from the sun. Now, what does all this red shift stuff have to do with a change of time? Well, if look at image number 3 on the website, and again, I'll describe it for you that are in your cars on the freeway. Imagine that we're sitting at the base of Seattle's Space Needle. And imagine that a short pulse of yellow light is shooting up from the parking lot past the top of the Space Needle. A scientist at the top of the Space Needle measures the light being redder and having a lower frequency than a scientist in the parking lot. Because, as Einstein said, the light has to lose energy as it moves up in the gravitational field of the Earth. Now, since the number of peaks in the light wave can't change, this means that the scientist at the top of the Space Needle says that the light's frequency is lower because these peaks occurred over a longer period of time. If you have 10 peaks occurring in 1 second, then that's a frequency of 10. But if you have 10 peaks occurring in 2 seconds, then that would be a lower frequency, a frequency of 5. Since the number of peaks has to be the same, the only thing that can change is the perception of time by the scientist who counts 10 peaks in the longer time period. So this means that the clock that the scientist is using at the top of the Space Needle must be running faster than the clock that the scientist is using in the parking lot. Now let's go through that again to make sure that we've got it right which way time is changing. If the scientist at the top of the Space Needle had 2 clocks, one running twice as fast as the other, then when the pulse of light with 10 peaks went by, he might see 1 second go by on the slow clock and 2 seconds go by on the fast clock. The slow clock would tell him that there were 10 peaks in 1 second, which is a frequency of 10, while the fast clock would tell him that those same 10 peaks took 2 seconds, which would be a frequency of 5. So the fast clock measures a lower frequency, which is exactly what Einstein said must happen. The clock in weaker gravity at the top of the Space Needle must run faster. Indeed, Einstein showed that time itself runs faster where gravity is weaker, and time runs slower where gravity is stronger. This effect, called gravitational time dilation, is proportional to m over r, only one r. M over r means that the degree to which gravity slows down time varies linearly with the distance. If you are twice as far away, gravity will slow down your time half as much. And if you are 10 times further away, gravity will slow down time by 10 times less. Because of Earth's gravity, time on Earth's surface runs slower by 4 seconds per century than it does somewhere out in the universe where there is no gravity. What does it really mean to say time runs slower? Would we live longer if time ran slower? Could we all pitch a baseball 200 miles an hour if an hour were longer? Well, not really. As we discussed 2 weeks ago in a show called Hey Einstein, What Time Is It? Time is really just how we measure how rapidly things change. If time ran half as fast, if everything around us changed half as quickly, we really wouldn't notice any difference. We might live 200 of some new type of year, but it would seem to be exactly the same. We would have the same number of heartbeats, the same number of thoughts, the same number of joys and of sorrows. We wouldn't notice any difference, as long as time changed for everything around us. When a change in time becomes important is when we compare the rate of time in different places with different gravity. The most extreme case is at the event horizon of a black hole. That's the point of no return. If you pass through the event horizon into the black hole, you're never coming back to this universe ever again. If someone fell into a black hole, they wouldn't notice any change in their time because everything around them is in the same gravity with the same slower time. But we, who are smart enough to stay away from the event horizon, would see their time run slower and slower as they approached the event horizon. And when they reached the event horizon, we would see their time come to a complete stop. Their blood would stop flowing in their veins. Their heart would never beat again. Their brain waves would stop waving. They would never move ever again. They would never die, but also they would never live. Their image would fade quickly from our view, but that image would never change for all eternity, because on the event horizon of every black hole, time does not exist. There is no such thing as time because nothing ever changes. Here back on Earth, fortunately, gravity isn't nearly as strong. And on the surface of the Earth, its gravity slows our time by 4 seconds per century, which really isn't very much. It's hardly enough to catch your breath after running full steam through life for over 100 years. And since all of our clocks run slow by the same amount, normally we don't even notice. But far above Earth's surface, where the GPS satellites orbit, the satellites that provide the global positioning system that many of us have in our cars, the radius R is 4 times larger. So M over R is 4 times less, and these satellites lose only 1 second per century. This means that the GPS system has to be corrected for Einstein's theories, or the readings of the GPS system would be completely worthless. It turns out that if your GPS system got you home to the right place on Monday night, Tuesday you'd be 6 miles off in some other town, and by Wednesday you might be out in the middle of the ocean. So it's essential for the proper operation of the GPS system that Einstein's theories be properly incorporated to account for time dilation. Earth isn't the only body that affects our time. The sun slows time in Earth's vicinity by about 1 minute per century. And even something as far away as the Andromeda Galaxy also slows our time. Andromeda is 15 million, million, million miles away. That was 3 millions if you weren't counting. That's over 100 billion times further than the sun. But Andromeda's mass is over a trillion times the mass of our sun. Thus, despite its vast distance, Andromeda actually slows our time far more than does our own sun. In fact, our time is affected by everything in the universe, and we, in turn, affect time everywhere else in the universe. There is no place in the universe that is so remote that it is not affected by the gravity of everything else. Everything in the universe is tied together by the three faces of gravity. Thank you very much for tuning in today, and remember, you are never too young or too old to wonder why.
Don't forget to explore Robert's website, GuideToTheCosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts on his books that are available to you, our radio audience. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future show topics. That's GuideToTheCosmos.com. Goodbye.